Welcome to the Unitarian Church. My name is Yomi Kinder. I welcome you to this community of hope and transcendence. Here we seek wisdom beyond our experience. Here we open our minds to the mystery of wonder and the moral imagination. Here we transcend the day-to-day of our lives to seek for truths both meaningful and sustaining. Here we seek to offer a loving message that provides wholeness in a broken world. We are Unitarian Universalists. I offer my welcome to you, and in particular, to those who are first-time visitors. We invite you to fill out one of the visitor cards found in the back of your gray hymnal and place it in the offering plate or give it to an usher. We'll send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know about the programs and activities going on here at the church. We are glad you are here and hope to see you again on future Sundays. We do have a nursery for infants and young children under the age of 4. Through these doors to the left, the first room after the foyer. And speaking of the nursery, having a person in the nursery is important to families and young children and the growth of our church. Would you like to share some of your time at church on Sunday with some of our littlest folks, infants and children under the age of 4? Do you also hesitate to volunteer your time in the nursery because you don't want to miss the service? Now you can do both. Ken has set up live audio streaming of the worship service in the nursery. Now there's no reason you can't do both. Please see Joy Heff. Joy? If you are interested, sign up for a week, one time a month, or wherever you can. We have 12 weeks to fill for the summer. During the summer, children and youth are encouraged to remain with us in worship. At the front, we have the Spirit Chair, which includes activities for all ages. You're welcome to go to the Spirit Chair at any time during the service to take an activity back to your seat. We welcome everyone into this home of comfort, spirit, justice, and hope. Let's see. Today, we are celebrating Jerry and Mary Johnson's 51st wedding anniversary. Great accomplishment in our times. Also, if anyone is interested in helping out at the Eastside Heart and Home Family Center during the summer work week, which is June 6th to June 11th, please see Mary Johnson for further information. It has come to the attention of the Canvas team that people are putting their pledges in cash every week. We are putting envelopes in the pews for those of you who are contributing your pledges in cash. If you are putting in cash that is not your pledge, you don't have to use the envelope. But there are envelopes by the hymnals for cash pledges. This announcement is from Mary Weber concerning a change or correction of the information on the Krista Tempit Ware Lecture. The announcement in the newsletter mentioned a potluck preceding the lecture. However, that is also the date of the June 4th Saturday lunch. So instead of a potluck, we are asking for people to bring finger food and snack items only, things that don't require a lot of work and make for quick cleanup afterwards. The sign-up sheet is posted back in the worker room. It's on the table, the buffet table. Also, there will most likely be childcare available. Mary will provide more information on that and further updates and reminders as the date nears. Again, the lecture is on June 25th at 7:30 here in our sanctuary. There will be time afterwards to eat, drink, and exchange opinions, and guests are welcome. And Mary Weber is at the back. If you have any other questions. And Pastor Sunshine has a few additional announcements.
So it is becoming very real to me that my time here is coming to an end. I have just a little under 2 months. I have started apartment searching in Syracuse, New York, where I have been hired as the interim minister at the May Memorial Unitarian Universalist Society. I'm looking forward to that, and I'm also starting to get a little sad about leaving you guys. I've been looking at the Mississippi River longingly and just, you know, all of that. So We have this service and then two more Sundays. June 19th will be my last preaching Sunday. And then my last day in the office will be July 7th. So if you need to meet with me for any reason before that time, I'm going to have an opportunity for folks to sit down and sign up a time with me after worship today. So just come up to me, find me, we'll set up a time so that we can meet before I leave town. And then my last official day with the church will be July 31st. I will be available in the event of emergencies, illness, those kinds of things. So if there's something seriously going on in your life, even during my vacation time, you are always encouraged to call and let me know. So, also in anticipation of leaving, I am doing a fundraiser event for the congregation. I have been crazy enough to decide to cook curry, garlic naan, and plain naan, and mango lassis for anybody who shows up on Friday, June 10th at 6:30 p.m. And then after dinner, we will have a Bollywood film, Monsoon Wedding, airing here in the sanctuary. This is the sign-up sheet. There's also the online sign-up sheet, so if you already signed up online, you're good. The cost will be $20 per person. Children of the age of 17 eat free, and of course, donations under that if you can't afford it, or donations over that if you can, are encouraged. I'm going to let this pass around during the worship service so you can sign up and you don't have to worry about hunting down a sign-up sheet afterwards. Last week of June, I will be in Columbus, Ohio for Ministry Days and General Assembly, as will Mary and Jerry, and I think Ruth, and Tom and Cochran isn't here, but they will all be going. And I'll be witnessing the Ware Lecture in person with Krista Tippett while you're watching it here on the big screen. We'll wave. I'm sure it will prove to be an amazing event. You can also watch all of General Assembly online for free. So if you're interested in some of the events, the worship services, those kinds of things, please feel free to watch it. If you have any questions, please let me know. Lastly, I will say that Becky Green is taking the first vacation she has ever taken in her 17 years with this congregation. Yes. She will be doing so for a week and a half in the middle of July. So beginning July 8th and ending on July 17th, she will be out of town and out of contact with her entire family, 13 family members going away. So if you have things that you need from her, you'll want to do that before July 8th or know that it'll happen after. And we'll make arrangements for things like, you know, the offering plate and those kinds of things. So with that, that concludes this morning's offering or announcements, except for one. I would like to welcome our new accompanist, Nicole Robbins. Nicole attends. Nicole attends Temple Emmanuel in St. Louis and has more than a decade experience playing for congregations in other communities, as well as teaching piano and voice lessons, has a degree in music, and played a piece. Sight read a piece that not even the composer can play without practice during her interview. So we were very impressed and glad to have her, especially after a few months of no accompanist. So please welcome her. And with that, she will begin our service this morning with a prelude. Thank you.
Our call to worship today is the words of Reverend Susan Manker Seal. Much of ministry is a benediction, a speaking well of each other and the world, a speaking well of what we value: honesty, love, forgiveness, and trust. A speaking well of our efforts, a speaking well of our dreams. This is how we celebrate life, through speaking well of it, living the benediction, and becoming, as a word, well spoken.
We need a couple of volunteers to help with our chalice lighting this morning. Do we have a younger person who's willing to help out? Isabella, come on up, our usual suspects. Anybody else younger wants to come up can. And older folks who want to help? Need one. Come on up. Grievous isn't old enough to be older folks. Casey, come on up.
Come on, guys.
So as Destiny lights our chalice this morning, I invite you to join me in our chalice lighting words. We light this chalice, symbol of Unitarian Universalism. May it remind us of the divine spark in all of creation, the power of love to heal what is broken, and to be grateful for life's blessings each day. Look out. Good job.
Please join me in reciting the mission statement of our congregation. We are creating a nurturing and intentional community that values acceptance, social justice, and the embodiment of UU principles.
Come, let us question together.
And our opening hymn is 1017, Building a New Way.
Please rise as your spirits and bodies allow.
Thank you.
So for our intergenerational moment this morning, I need you to help me build an aquarium. Can you do that? Yeah? So what do you need for an aquarium?
Water.
Water is very important. You might need an aquarium, yes? Okay. So an aquarium, now we've got water. What do we need next? Do we put fish in first?
No.
No, very important. What goes in first? Rocks and pebbles. Then what?
Seaweed
and plants. Little tiny homes for them to hide in. What was that? It's looking like a pretty cool aquarium so far. Huh? A filter. Yes, it needs a filter. Very important. What? A snail. Snail is very important to the story I'm going to tell. Don't forget that part. So we have a snail in our tank. What else do we need in our tank? Groovus. Oh, okay. So you have an ocean, a saltwater tank, right? If we have a snail, this is going to be a freshwater tank. Okay, I gotcha. What kind of fish do we want in with our snail? Isabella. The flat fish? Anybody know what we're talking about, tiny flat fish? Angel fish, okay. Tetra, maybe a goldfish in there, because I like goldfish. Maybe a little koi. Okay. Huh? Fish that don't eat each other. That's interesting. Phil. Okay, so the catfish will eat the goldfish. Okay. The goldfish are out. We'll keep the catfish. All right, so we've got a bunch of fish, and we've got our snail. And our snail is very important to our story today. So our story is by a man named Edwin Freeman. And he started this story with, "Once there was a snail who grew tired of eating poop." As you might imagine, kind of gets tiring eating poop day in and day out. And so the snail tried to eat other things, like the fish flakes. But those didn't taste very good and didn't really make the snail feel very good. And so then the snail tried to eat some of the plants in the aquarium, and that didn't work either. Snail started getting groggier and groggier and slower. And what was happening in the tank?
It's getting dirtier.
It's getting dirtier and dirtier, right? Till almost you can't see. And for those of you who are fish aficionados, you're like, no, actually that's not true. Please just go with it for the story. So it gets dirtier and dirtier and murkier and murkier. And after a while, what happens? The fish die. And what happens to the snail? Snail's alone, and then what?
It dies.
It dies. The snail dies. And that's the end of the story. There's a moral to the story, though, that's important to our theme today. I do believe I'm going to be putting that on Facebook later today. Yes, the moral of the story is eat shit and like it. No. I do love Unitarian Universals. Can I just say, what other congregation would that happen in, right? No, the thing is if the snail doesn't play the part it needs to play in the tank, it hurts the entire tank, right? Even if it's just tired. It's not that it didn't like eating poop, it was just tired of it. So it wanted to do something else. But when it decided to do something else, everything got out of whack, right? The thing is that as congregations, as people who are moral people, who believe in doing the right thing, it oftentimes means we got to hang out in the poop. And doesn't that get tiring? Yeah. Hanging out in injustice, walking with people who are struggling, sitting with a fellow congregant who's dying, or as a family member who's dying, being in those dark and difficult places, being the bottom feeders who who sustain the entire ecosystem. It doesn't mean that the snail didn't get to enjoy things like seeing the rest of the fish tank or being in the world or those kinds of things, experiencing beauty. But we all can understand getting tired of being in the muck, of living in that place. And yet, we need to be there. We need to play that role. Someone needs to play that role. As Unitarian Universalists, we have long made a claim of being the people who sit in the muck. During the Civil War, many of our leaders and many of our members risked their homes and their lives in order to say no to slavery. Many gave up their lives and lived in struggle so that women might have equal rights with men. And then later, when the Civil Rights Movement came on, that African Americans and people of color would have that right. The thing is, though, that at a certain point, many of us get tired of being in those murky places, and we walk away for a while, and the work's still there to do. The work of the church is to help us sustain ourselves in the beautiful places and the murky ones, and not to live too much in one or the other, but to know that our presence is needed. That sometimes we gotta eat poop to keep the world alive, right? Maybe not literally, metaphorically, eat poop. So in some sense, it's eat shit or die. So that's our story today. Be the snail. Be the snail who holds its role in the good times and the murky times, because your presence is needed.
I was asked to write a reflection today, and I just happened to have just talked to somebody about Unitarian Universalists, so. We do. That is the really quick explanation of UU that I give people when they ask what UUs believe in. I tell them we believe in lots of good ideas and truths, but what is important is we do projects and actions to make our community and hopefully the world a better place. The people I talk to about this are a bit flabbergasted. They've hardly ever heard of a church that's not all about prayers and preaching. We are unique. Talking and planning is a necessity, but honestly, talk is cheap if we don't use actions to back it up. We have lots of songs in our hymnal that talk about building a better world, a fairer world for all. The key word is building, and we all need to put our hands in to get the results we want. And yesterday I just happened to come across a quote by E.B. White that sums it up nicely. He said, "I wake each day to change the world and to have a great time. Sometimes that makes planning my day difficult."
How many of you identify with being a bottom feeder? Anybody? Certainly have my days. The thing about doing that work, about, you know, planning your day to do the great work and to be out there in the world, is it requires some energy. It requires presence. It requires, as we've talked about before, the hashtag stay woke, to not fall asleep. It requires community. It requires what James Luther Adams, who's a Unitarian minister from the 50s, called the prophethood of all believers. Now, Unitarian Universalism's polity, everybody say that word once, polity. Now you can forget it. Polity, which is a big thing you have to study in seminary, yeah, is all about how do we organize ourselves around our beliefs. And Unitarian Universalists, we organize ourselves how? Who has the most important power in our communities? The congregation, that's right, right? Nothing happens without the congregations, which is why at General Assembly at the end of the month, we'll have Jerry and Ruth going as delegates, representing this congregation in the votes of our congregation and the work it does. So those principles that many of you love, do you know how those were created? By congregations. They were discussed at General Assembly, they were brought back to Unitarian Universalists, they went back to General Assembly, they argued and nitpicked until the day was long about whether it was the or a or a, you know? And they came up with the principles, which if you're new to our congregation, in the gray hymnal on the very front, our principles and our sources are listed. It comes from our communities. So what does it mean to minister in that scenario? I'll tell you as a minister that depending on the congregation, you have more or less power than pretty much any other denomination, right? Catholic priest walks in and says, this is what you should do. Guess what? That's what you should do. I come in and say, this is what you should do. And yeah, I have zero expectation that you will do that. I have none. I walk in knowing that some of you be like, yes. And some of you are like, you don't get to tell me what to do. And some of you are like, well, no, I don't agree with how we do. We should do it this other way. And right? And that is a power that our religious tradition has. And it is founded in a rich history and heritage of doing that, of being the congregation, the priesthood itself, so that the priesthood doesn't lie within me, it lies within you. So the ministry of the church is your ministry. It is your work to do. But he also says we're the prophethood of all believers. And what that means is I don't get to just be the only prophetic one in the room, you do too. So many of you come to say, Sunshine, hey, there's this whole thing about food deserts in Illinois. What are we going to do about it? That's you being prophetic. You healing our world. You being willing to have a transgender interim minister is being a prophet. There are many congregations in our denomination who would never hire me in a million years just because of who I am. Right? And I'm a person. Most days, yeah. But that's being a prophet, right? This congregation has taken a prophetic stance. And even before I showed up, Sayer Johnson was the first transgender board president of this congregation. And even that is really unusual in our congregations. And it's you being a prophet as a congregation, saying yes to life. So the polity of our denomination says that it isn't my work to be the priest and to be the prophet alone. It is my job, but I don't do it alone. I have to do it with you, the congregation, and with Unitarian Universalists around the world. And there's a struggle with that prophetic imperative because it can be exhausting, like that snail. Who wants to keep eating the dung of life over and over? Which is why it's so important to live into transcendence and beauty. It's why it's so important to have trivia nights and Bollywood nights and times that we gather together and have fun, because that's part of what's sustaining. Because it's in our hands to do. In this day and age, particularly in the political climate that exists right now, that's saying something. I look at the numbers and I keep thinking, how is Trump doing so well? And I think to some degree it's because folks are shutting down. They just want the most charismatic, strong-willed person they can find and forget it. Because it is so easy to say, I am done with poop. It's just too much. I'm overwhelmed, going to sleep. We practice within our congregations how to stay present, to stay woke, to communicate with each other,
and to do it with kindness and compassion, particularly when we don't like each other or don't agree, so that we can live that as a model for the world, because the world needs role models for healthy communication, healthy ministry, healthy prophethood that says, this is how it should be, without denigrating other people, without saying, because you believe that, you're stupid, you don't know what you're talking about, just saying, this is how we need to treat one another in the world, because the world needs us to model living in community. And that is part of the work of being a prophethood of believers, believers in what? Certainly not God. Though we have many believers in God, and I'm not belittling our believers in God in the room. But since we don't all believe in God, we can't have a prophethood of believers in God. That doesn't work. So what do we have? We have a prophethood of believers in healthy communication, in compassionate relationship, in trust and respect, love, grace. We hold faith in the capacity of humanity to grow and heal. May it be so.
Each week, we take time to recognize the joys and sorrows, the celebrations and struggles of this community. We do this by taking a stone or stones from the bowls as we enter or from the bowl that's under the chancel. We allow the stones to bring us into awareness of those things most important in our life through thought or meditation. We then place them in the cleansing waters of this community, which include a little bit of water collected from our annual water communion. If you have a joy, a sorrow, a celebration, or a struggle you wish to recognize, you are invited to come forward now in a ritual of joy and sorrow.
Join with me in singing as you are ready. The river is flowing, flowing and growing. The river is flowing down to the sea. Mother, carry me, your child I will always be. Mother, carry me down to the sea. The river is flowing, flowing and growing. The river is flowing down the sea. Mother, carry me, your child I will always be. Mother, carry me down to the sea. The river is flowing, flowing and growing. The river is flowing down to the sea. Mother, carry me, your child I will always be. Mother, carry me down to the sea. The river is flowing, flowing and growing. Down to the sea. Mother, carry me, your child I will always be. Mother, carry me down to the sea. The river is flowing, flowing and growing. The down to the sea. I place a stone in the bowl for all of those joys, sorrows, lying in the silent sanctuary of our hearts, and a stone in the bowl for all those who cannot be with us in community today. I invite you now to join me in a time of meditation, prayer, or contemplation as is your own personal spiritual practice. I invite you to take a slow, deep breath in and out. And when you breathe in, push your belly out, breathing in and out. In order for us to be more present and in our bodies, I invite you to breathe in, and when you breathe out, to make a noise going from the highest to the lowest. And as you do so, feel it going from your nose into your chest, breathing in and out. And again, noticing how it feels in your body, breathing in and out. And one last time, in and out. O Spirit of life, still small voice within and mystery beyond our knowing. Mystery held not in our experience, but the experiences of all gathered here and all in the world. We hold our hearts open to those in times of struggle and pain, to those experiencing loss and grief, to those in our community who are sick, and to those who are dying, and to all who need our loving grace and our loving presence. May we reach out to one another. May we listen to one another, hearing the words of the other person, without placing our filter onto their experience. We offer blessings and gratitude for the beautiful day outside, for the lovely cool breeze and the beautiful sun, the amazing river that rolls through our neighborhood, giving life to all that comes after. We offer our blessings to each other and to a world that needs our presence, a world at many wars, a world constantly in conflict, a world that too frequently invites us into negativity, to unkindness, to bitterness and disrespect. May we resist that with all our being, with love and presence, with grace and patience. May we pause before we act. May we wait before we speak. May we hold grace in this day and all the days to come. I invite you now into a brief time of silent reflection, meditation, or prayer. As we come back into this space, becoming aware of the air and the feel of the clothes on our skin, of all that is around and surrounds us, and all that is within us. I invite you to take a slow, deep breath in and out. One more time, in and out. One last time, in and out. Blessed be and amen.
We each receive from this church the opportunity to explore meaning, purpose, and value in our lives. How does the money you give reflect what you receive? How does our collecting money transform all within and beyond our congregation walls? This morning's offering will be gratefully received, may it be lovingly given.
Please join me in our offertory blessing. To the work of the church, which is weaving a tapestry of love we call community, we dedicate ourselves and these our offerings.
Please join me in our responsive reading for today. The words of Reverend Angela Herrera. Okay. Don't leave your broken heart at the door. Bring it to the altar of life. Don't leave your anger behind. It has high standards, and the world needs vision. Bring them with you, and your joy, and your passion. Bring your loving, and your courage, and your conviction. Bring your need for healing and your powers to heal. There is work to do, and you have all that you need to do it right here in this room.
At this time, I would like to invite those who participated in our ministerial search committee this year to come forward. I'll invite Casey. Where is Casey? Okay. She may have just heard that, too. You're pretending to be Casey. She let you know who. Okay. Okay. So we have most of the committee here. Lane Simpson, Phil Embry, Nancy Kniff, I almost said Combs Luker, which is Casey. Like, nah, that doesn't work. And Mary Johnson. And then we also had Kelly Crone Willis and Robin Berkeley. Yes. So we want to offer our particular gratitude to you for serving our congregation in this way. And we have a gift for you. These were made personally by Casey Combs Luker. They have different phrases. Phrases are specific to each of you. They were given to you intentionally, so know that that is the case. I will invite the congregation to join when it is time by saying, "We give you our blessings." Can you say that? So you accepted the call to serve on the search committee for the last year, even though you knew it would take a lot of your time and a lot of your energy. You are steadfast and committed. You held your commitment and you kept your promise to this congregation. Now, at the completion of your service to the congregation in this way, we release you of your responsibility with gratitude for your important work. And we offer as a community this blessing written by Jill Ann Terwilliger. For the longing that told you it was time for a change, we give you our blessings. For the courage it took to answer the call, we give you our blessings. For the choices already made and for the daily choices that will face the life ahead of you, we give you our blessings. For the communities that you have shown, that have shown you who you are, and the new communities waiting to discover you in your new ventures, we give you our blessings. For the mystery of what lies ahead, we give you our blessings. May you see something of beauty along your way, touch hands with those you love, and give more than you get. Goodness knows you already have. For all of this and more, we give you our blessings. We thank you for your service and for your commitment this year. Know that you have our eternal gratitude. May you be blessed, and may you have a great respite. May it be so. What was that? You're free. Freedom. It is no small task to be on a search committee. It takes a lot of hours. It's even harder, I think, to be on a search committee when you don't find the ministry you're looking for. And I do want the congregation to know there are at least 12 other congregations who did not find a match this year. It's a difficult year. It's great for ministers. We get the pick of the lot. But for congregations, it's a particularly difficult time. I'm led to understand by Keith Cron in the transitions office that next year looks to be a little bit better. We'll see how that goes. In the meantime, you're venturing on an unofficial, I'm not allowed to say what's happening, but you will be going into an interim time next year in a creative way. And so I want to offer my gratitude to the search committee, and particularly because you said no when you needed to say no to the people you needed to say no to, which is as much the position of the committee as finding the right person. So we thank you for that. One of the things I want to talk today about with this whole concept of ministry, particularly the ministry of the congregation, is how do we know when we're doing a good job of it? How do we know when we're doing well? There are a lot of ways that this happens, and one of the least successful ways is to do a survey. One of the second most least successful ways to do it is to evaluate the minister. One of the third least effective ways is to evaluate committees or the board or individual communities. Why is that? Because people are adaptive, they're complicated, there are dozens if not hundreds of people involved in every little thing. And so, for example, when you are doing ministry, say around worship, do you evaluate me? Do you evaluate me and the worship associates? Do you evaluate me and the worship associates and everybody who participates in worship on a given Sunday? Do you evaluate everybody who attends worship? How do you determine how worship is going when there are so many fingers in the pie? Now, I, as your minister, have ultimate say over what happens in worship, right? But I don't create it alone. In fact, Yomi is the reason why we did the reading that we did with our ministerial search committee today, right? She said, that should be for that, and she was right, and so that's how it was. I co-create this service with our worship associates and with the people in the community. And I preach to topics based on what I'm hearing from you. It's pretty amazing, you know. Back in September, I had three or four of you, I think it was three for sure, and I think there was a fourth who was kind of on the edge about it, who were having crises of faith. And what was our theme that month? Faith. Couldn't have been any better, right? So I preached on that. Whatever's going on in your lives becomes what I talk about. And some folks are like, well, you did that because of me. And it's like, no, usually there's a few others who are going through the same thing you're going through. It's not just you. And yes, of course, it was you because we co-created. So what is becoming more common in congregations is to use a model we call Committee on Shared Ministry and to use a process we call completing the circle. What completing the circle does is it says we can't just have an evaluation and call it a day. We can't just tell the worship associates, this is what I think, and assume that's appropriate evaluation of worship. We can't go to the religious education team and say, this is what I think, and have that be effective evaluation. That's one of the tools. We need your voice. We need to know what you think and what you hear and what you need. And because you're Unitarian Universalists, we hear a lot of competing opinions. So it's hard to decide what is the best path. Completing the circle says that we strive for healthy communication in all we do, and we evaluate and review everyone involved. And when we review, we use skills for healthy communication. How many of you have studied nonviolent communication? Anybody? Wow, just a couple. So nonviolent communication has a couple of key things to it, one of which is know when it's a thought, know when it's a feeling. I don't know how many times somebody has to say, well, I think that was terrible. Okay, I know there's a feeling word in there somewhere. You need to assess, is this a thinking thing or is this a feeling thing? Well, I think you were hurtful to them. That one's a little more obvious, right? That's a feeling phrase. This is know when we're thinking and know when we're feeling, and use the appropriate words. And the second thing with the nonviolent communication is assume that you don't always understand what the other person is saying. So check your assumptions. Which I think you guys did the fourfold path or the four promises or something like that. And one of them is don't assume that you understand what the other person is saying, right? Huh? Four agreements. Thank you. I knew it was something like that. That was not in the initial sermon plan, so I pulled that up and here we are. So the four agreements has that same expectation. That we don't always understand what's happening, which means healthy communication says we have to check. We have to sit down and chat. We have to figure it out. Now, I will say, diversity has been a blessing to our society, but it has come with some serious challenges. 200 years ago, you may never know more than 200 people, and those 200 people were all trained in the same way to communicate, which meant, generally speaking, you could say something and they would understand what you say. As those communities have expanded and overlapped, we have so many different ways of communicating and understanding in all of this, that part of diversity and being diverse means knowing that how I say something is not necessarily how someone hears something. So for example, in the South, I would say, can you do dot, dot, dot? And that was heard as a command. Because can you do means you will do that in the South. In the Midwest, it means, would you do that? Are you willing? Right? It was a whole different conversation. We have that going on and on and on over and all over the place. And so part of effective ministry as a congregation is modeling how we have those difficult conversations. Because look at how that has been a train wreck for our society, right? People thinking they understand or hear what another person is saying and it blows all out of proportion. And then once you get the media involved, forget it. Now it's a whole new imaginary narrative that has nothing to do based in reality. So, in this work of completing the circle, communication is key. And so what we need to do is use some particular tools, but there are some key ones that I like. This is David McMahill. I'll share a little bit of what he has to say. He talks about reviewing ministry, which I think it doesn't work just from reviewing. It's anything that we do, any way that we relate. He says needs to be consistent with the nature of the covenantal relationship between the pastor and the congregation and the individuals in the church. So every Sunday when you walk in, you see our covenant up there, right? And that's how we promise to be together as a community. And with a theological understanding of the nature of the church and its ministry. Now, I know some of you are like, theological? We're not theological. It goes back to what I was saying in the beginning, right? The way we organize ourselves. Congregations have the first say. And then it goes out from there. That is how we believe things happen. In community, through democratic process. In community, through democratic process. And so the role of the congregation is to model that healthy communication to people like, I know, Donald Trump. Right? Or Fox News, or even MSNBC, who goes way off the hook with their stuff. Anybody who's kind of in that stream, our job is to say, no, we need better than that for our society. So, the things that he says, first off, speak up. That means if you have a concern, speak up. We've had in the past few months a few people finally tell us that they're quitting the church without ever having communicated to us that they had a problem. And then are mad that we didn't respond to the problem. Now, I've done that in my life. Anybody else done that in their life? They get mad and they just leave and they don't explain what they got mad about. And then you have to speak up. You have to say, this is what's going on for me. As a community, we all have so much going on in our lives. We may not notice what's happening with you. It may not be obvious. We need your presence. We need you to speak up. And then the second part of that is to listen up, which means to really hear each other. Hear what each other thinks and feels. To be present to that. We don't have to agree to listen, to hear, to be together. And the third thing he talks about, and I think this one is the one that our society needs the most help with. It is called awfulizing. As in the word awful, izing. Awfulizing is when you take an experience and you make it far bigger than it was. So the example he gives is a retired bishop or a retired priest in a congregation starts a sermon conversation group on the Monday after the new minister gives their sermon. And in that Monday conversation group, that retired minister lays in and destroys everything that the new minister has said in the sermon. Now, as you might imagine, this starts to lead some conflict in the congregation because everybody is now starting to quote what this gentleman's saying and they're all getting bad-mouthing the priest, and the new priest is having a hard time settling his ministry. So the bishop comes in and says, you know, Minister Emerita, this is not being in good covenant with your colleague, first off. And second off, you're hurting the church. And the bishop says, but I just wanted to have an act. I'm a member. I wanted to have an act of participate in the congregation. I wanted to give what I could. Yes, I understand that, said the bishop. But the way you're doing it is making it really hard for the congregation to move on from your retirement, to heal and to kind of grow into this new priest. What do you think happened next? No, he actually stopped holding the meeting. But when he stopped holding the meeting, the reason he said was the bishop told me I had to shut up or I could lose my pension.
Oh my goodness.
That is awfulizing. And there is great power in awfulizing. Either it's a, oh, poor me, support me, and you get a bunch of people come up to you, or I'm the hero who's telling how the bishop is a terrible person, and I'm going to fix it. All of us have done awfulizing in our lives. No one is innocent of this one. And it is one of those things we hear in our politics all the time. You know, those liberals, they're destroying America. We got to make America great again. That is awfulizing. It's making it far worse than it is. Part of our job in congregations is to say, yeah, this isn't working for me. But not to make it bigger than it is. I'll give you an example of how this church awfulizes around money. I first came in, oh, we're near bankruptcy, we're going to close soon, we can't afford another minister, da da da. I heard the same thing from colleagues who were considering this church. I've heard that they have terrible finances and whatever, which means your words are getting out there. Here's some facts about this church. It owns its building. It has no debt. It has multiple endowments. It has a reserve fund. And once it realized it was having accounting issues, started fixing it and is continuing to do so. All of those things, extraordinarily healthy. Is it perfect? No. Will it be? No. I give you about 10 years from the time you started working on it. So in 2022, if you haven't gotten to the point where your accounting is stable and all of that, then you can say we're having an awful time with finances. But until 2022, stop it. You're awfulizing it. And then people come into the church and they think, well, I don't want to give money to that. I don't want to be in a dying congregation. Who wants to be a part of that? Yes, the church has had financial struggles. Yes, the budget isn't always what we want it to be. Is the church going to die financially? Not a chance. You have too many financial resources on your side right now. As part of why, a year ago, we voted to stop funding the religious education position, because we were paying that position out of our reserve fund and eating it up, and it would have been gone. It was a difficult decision. I wasn't happy about it. I'd rather work with a religious education person. But it meant that you are financially stable as a result, right? So you're doing the good work. You're making the difficult decisions. Stop awfulizing your finances, darn it. And by practicing not awfulizing amongst ourselves, we can share that with the world. We can see it when it happens and say, oh, I'm not getting into that. I'm not going to become a part of that awfulizing. I'm not going to make it worse than it is. I'm going to be factual and say, yes, it's not perfect. And there's still a lot of good going on. Your ministry requires that you be present, that you speak up, that you listen to each other, and that you not get into these cycles of how terrible everything is. Because it's easy to get into those cycles when, truthfully, this is an amazing congregation. Search committee, if they decide, they can share the letter I wrote for you guys, but I'll tell you, at the end of the letter, I said one thing that was true. The whole thing was true, but one thing that really was particularly important. Among the things was that this is an easy congregation to love. And why is that? Because you live love as a community. There are people who drive an hour to attend this church when there's a UU church 10 minutes away. So don't awfulize yourselves. Lift up the positive. Lift up the reasons why people want to be here, because you are an amazing community who has a lot of fun, who has a lot of humor, a lot of heart, a lot of joy. And you're willing to be a little wacky sometimes. And honestly, for me, that's the best. So may you do your ministry with love and grace and shed your light out into the world, a beacon on the Mississippi River. May it be so. I invite you to rise as your spirits and bodies allow and join in singing hymn number 1028, Fire of Commitment, at pace. Yeah. every Sunday, I promise, but that was awesome. I invite you to face across the chandeliers towards your neighbors. This is your community. I invite you to give a smile, a kind look to someone, particularly someone you maybe didn't come with today. This is the ministry. The people in this room are our ministry. The people here in front of you are trust, our faith, our diversity and hope. The people before you are the embodiment of love and compassion. May you go forth this week knowing that you are not alone and that the world needs our saving message, that we all belong, we all have worth, we all matter. May it be so, blessed be. Our worship is ended, let our service begin.